Rush into Old Navy today for this can't-miss one-day deal. 50% off all Old Navy active for the family. Get the workout wear you need at a huge 50% off one day only today. Hurry in or miss out at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/20, select styles only, excludes in-store clearance.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. I guess we can call this one a bonus edition of the podcast, the second one I'm putting up on Saturday. The first one had to get to some actual news with this, the NBA suspending Wizards for Kelly Oubre for Saturday or for Sunday's game four. I shared some thoughts on that. Isaiah Thomas with the Celtics also chimed in as I was at Boston's practice earlier on Saturday. So check that out. On iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you do your podcasting. This episode has to do with three different interviews that I conducted during at Game 3 between the Wizards and Celtics Thursday at Verizon Center. There are some Wizards and Celtics talking here, but it's a lot more broader topics, and I'll kind of explain what I mean with all that as we go through the show. But first up will be Mike Prieto with SB Nation. Of course, you guys already know Mike from his great Wizards coverage. We talked about the fact that Mike just wrote an article about the D.C. area starting to embrace the Wizards more and more, and he also spoke with some of the big principals within the organization. Then we got NBA.com writer Lang Whitaker. I went with for him to give us some of that national perspective on John Wall, Otto Porter, and some other things about the Wizards this season. And then lastly, Brian Scalabrine, NBA player turned Celtics announcer, but more than that, he's become a huge figure in the NBA world, something of a stunner even to him. And we talked about that and his thoughts on sort of the series as a whole. So I'm going to get to all that here in just a second. Again, if you don't already, please subscribe to the podcast. Every day, literally, we're talking about the Wizards every day here on the podcast. I don't think I've missed a day now, and I'm not in, I don't know, several weeks at this point. And obviously, as long as the Wizards keep going, we'll keep talking about them. Subscribe, and you won't miss any of that. Furthermore, if you missed it, go back and check Thursday's recap podcast I did with Todd Dibas. We really touched base on the intense nature of this series, what we thought about that Oubre situation in the moment, the 8 technical fouls beyond that in the game, and how the Wizards were able to turn the series around with that win. Also on Friday's podcast, one-on-one with Phil Chenier and a one-on-one with Tomas Satoransky. Good stuff there. Plus some other thoughts about this Oubre thing. I guess this is sort of now day 3 of that because we had the extra day in between the series. So let's get into this. First up, I mentioned Mike Prieto. Caught up with him before game 3. Talked about his article about the Wizards that I already mentioned. Among the interesting points in this article, beyond the fact that, again, John Wall, Bradley Beal leading something of a revival with regards to the Wizards and getting attention in town, but also he did speak to Ted Leonsis, and interesting thoughts there about that James Harden trade from many moons ago that was rumored involving Bradley Beal. So interesting thoughts there. So here we go. Mike Prieto with SB Nation talking about his article and some other Wizards topic.
All right, we're talking here with now a two-time guest of the Locked On Wizards podcast, Mr. Mike Prieto from SB Nation. Mike, you wrote a story that I need to read more of. I read the first couple paragraphs.
I know, and it's long. It's long. I get it.
I was here for Wizards practice and I was doing stuff and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But it's on my to-do list. But that said, I want everybody to kind of know about it because you did a deeper dive about these guys, meaning the Wizards, and about sort of their, I don't know, re-emerging in town as a team for people to root for. But just kind of give everybody the idea of kind of what this thing is about.
Yeah, so I came in April to kind of see what these guys are like and what was different about this year. And it kind of struck me looking around town, you know, and observing them that there's something different between this team even this year and like 2-3 years ago when they were still, you know, 45 wins, 46 wins. It felt like there was more permanence to it. So I tried to explore sort of like what made this year different and what steps kind of took there, not just like with the way they're playing, but sort of the way that they have their foothold on the city. And it was actually pretty serendipitous that the Ben's Chili Bowl mural happened the way it was, because I didn't know that that was happening until after I left. But once I saw that, I thought it was like a really good symbol of like kind of what I thought I had witnessed while I was here. You know, so I did a little bit of reporting to find out more, and I found it was very emblematic of sort of how this team has risen. Like, they obviously want to market their team, but it still was kind of rushed. It didn't all work out perfectly well, but it, at the end, there's something that is the start of something. And it's important to say that it's the start of something. Like, they've, this is like year one, I think, of like them being kind of normal in a lot of ways. And that, and when you throw in the history of the 40 years, I tried to really thread that needle in that respect, and I hope people enjoyed it.
It's definitely interesting. It definitely has felt different this year. They had that year. I mean, it's weird because they started 2-8, obviously, and everybody was like, "Oh boy, here they go again." But a few years ago with Whitman, they started with like 22-9. But for some reason, that didn't. I guess it was 22-9 that sort of faded away. Here, it's not that just they got better. They were, other than Golden State, had the best record in the league for 2 months, give or take. And it did feel like there was something more to it that people were buying into off of that. So it did feel different this year. There's definitely that. Who did you talk to within, like, who did you talk to within the Wizards about sort of this phenomenon?
Yeah, I talked to Ted Leonsis for a good
The guy that owns the team?
Yeah. I think he likes talking about how the team is doing well, but he was very gracious. You know, he sat in his office and he kind of talked about some of the journeys they had. You know, the thing that I thought was most interesting that he said that he volunteered was, if you remember 5 years ago, there was a lot of talk about that they nearly completed a deal. Maybe not nearly completed. They pondered a deal for Bradley Beal for James Harden, and he was telling me like why they didn't do it. And, you know, forget the basketball side of it, like whether you think that was a good or bad move. What struck me was that they're really committed to the fact that this is a homegrown core, you know. And I think even 2 years ago they had a lot of guys they imported from other places on the team as like bridge players. This year it's very clear that this is Wall and Beal's team. It's Wall, it's Beal, it's those two on the mural, it's those two as the faces. It's no more people caddying for them. And I thought that it was interesting that he brought that up, because I think he, one of the things that I think reading between the lines appealed to him about not making that trade was that, yeah, James Harden may have been a really great player, but also he's not a homegrown guy. Like, we saw Brad from day one, we saw John from day one, and there's something a little more connecting about that. And I think you see that with the crowds this year. 6 sellouts in the last 13 games compared to 1 of the first 28. You know, that's a big thing.
Absolutely. Every time they come and tell us that it was a sellout, I'm like, oh, all right, this is a new world. This isn't game 6 against the Pacers, where it's to stay alive in the playoffs, and it wasn't a sellout.
No, they sold out against Miami. You know, when's the last time they sold out against Miami?
Without LeBron.
Right. You know, and that was, I think, a big marker. They sold against Toronto. You know, Toronto's a team that obviously is in their bracket, but it's not, they're not Cleveland or not Golden State. They sold out that game. I think that was a big marker. You know, look, there's still ways to go. This is only year one. But I think it finally felt like, you know, after 40 years, there's some permanence to this for whatever, wherever it goes, wherever they win. Never win 49 games again, whether they win 55, whether they break through. It still feels like this is something that in 20 years we'll say, oh yeah, I remember living through the Wall and Beal era, the same way that people in the 70s say, I remember living through the West and Chenier and Elvin Hayes era.
I'm old enough to have remembered both of them on some level, so that tells you where I'm. I'll let you go on this. I want people to read the article about what Ted had to say about the Harden trade, but I always find that a fascinating discussion, so I'll just throw out this and just get your what your thought is. Obviously, James Harden has turned into possibly the NBA's MVP, and yet I really did think the Wizards, at the basis of the deal, Harden for Beal, that the Wizards were right to not make the deal, in that I don't know how Harden and John Wall play together. James Harden dominates the ball. Clearly, so does Wall. Harden can play off the ball. Wall really can't. I mean, maybe this year is the first time, or maybe he could a little. So to me, just in terms of Wall, I thought playing with Harden wouldn't necessarily be great. Obviously, I don't know if I thought Harden would be an MVP of the league. But anyway, so what your quick thoughts, like hypothetically, what did you think then and what do you kind of think about it now?
When you have great players, you put it together and you make it work. I agree, though, it's not a clean fit, and that's what Leonsa said in our interview. Like, they didn't think that they could play together. They're too ball dominant. Beal complimented well, but they're great players. I think they would have figured it out. It wasn't just Beal in the trade. There were other pieces, I think. And it's not really clear either, like, whether it was who blocked it. You know, I know the Wizards said they eventually decided they weren't going to do it, but how serious was it? It depends on who you ask. But I think it's hard to look at what Harden's done and say, no, the Wizards would not be a better team with him. But I do think it's a little trickier, and I think also the fact that it's, again, Beal, the homegrown star, there's something a little more organic about that, that outside of on-court performance, it's a little easier to get behind that if all else is equal.
All right, well, anyway, go to SB Nation, read Mike's article. What's the headline?
Oh, what is the headline?
Jeez. All right, well, you'll find it. Or, you know, you'll find it on SB Nation on the NBA,
something
section.
Something like how the Wizards created a battle, whatever.
Yeah.
I thought of it a while ago.
I never know my headlines either. Anyway, yeah, so go read good stuff from Mike on this evolving fan base and sort of how they're building the Wizards. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
It's great to talk to you again, man. It's been too long.
Anytime, man. Thanks.
All right, fun conversation with Mike Prada there. Definitely go check out the article. Some really interesting stuff from him on the on where the Wizards are tracking these days in town. And that James Harden conversation, or that James Harden thing, one of those like sort of off-season topics I would love to do a podcast on down the line. All right, let's go next here. Lang Whitaker, NBA.com writer. Again, with him, I wanted to get his sense. There's always this discussion about John Wall. Does he get enough credit, attention, respect? John Wall talks about these things, so I wanted to get Lang's perspective on that from his national perch, among other topics. So here we go, Lang Whitaker and I talking about John Wall and the Wizards.
All right, we're here with national NBA writer Lang Whitaker. Lang, really appreciate your time. The idea of John Wall's national recognition always comes up. He brings it up, the fans bring it up. It's hard for us sort of living in the bubble here to get an appreciation because I see it every day and, you know, you don't know. But I'm sort of curious what you think. I mean, whether we're talking about, is he going to make one of the three All-NBA teams? Where does he rank among NBA point guards? Just as a star, as the league as a whole. From your perspective, where does kind of John Wall, do you think, kind of fit in with this NBA world?
Well, he's been an all-star, so I think he's played at that level. I'm probably a little skewed on this because I used to be at Slam Magazine and he was on the cover when he was at Kentucky. And I was just thinking about, I came here when he was a rookie. I think he was on the cover of Slam and I interviewed him sitting in the stands right over there. I think he probably still has another level he can get to in terms of recognition and all that. He doesn't have a shoe company pushing him. He's not in commercials on that standpoint. So I think he probably has another level he can get to. The best way you can get that recognition is right now in the playoffs. Everybody's going to be watching Isaiah Thomas after the 53-point game. And now I think tonight, if Wall can answer back, he's going to get a lot of eyeballs and a lot more attention.
That's what makes it so bizarre. Like, last game almost is a classic John Wall example of his career. He played like the MVP level candidate, at least for say the first 3.5 quarters. I think he got some tired legs late, and they were on the verge of winning. If they close that game out, Isaiah doesn't get the 53 because there's no overtime, and we're all probably saying, "Wow, John Wall, look what he did, put this team on his back, yada yada yada." And yet, they don't hold the lead. Isaiah goes, you know, Superman, and it's sort of like that kind of. I think even John probably feels that way. It's like no matter what he seems to do, he always has that weird thing that happened where the other guy somehow overtakes him.
You know, that's not always his fault. In that Hawks series, he had a couple of slam dunks and drives that were just unbelievable. That were, you know, the play of the night and led the SportsCenter top plays and all that stuff. That being said, I mean, if they lose this series, people aren't going to talk about him. And so, I mean, look, it's all tied into winning at some point. And as great as he can play in this series, they're down 0-2. He's got to win some games. The Wizards have to win some games if he wants that recognition and to be, you know, recognized as that type of player. It's not always his fault. I mean, he had that one turnover at the end of game two. And on the replay, you could see his wrist was held on the play. And, you know, but it's not really his fault that it happened that way. But like you said, it happened that way. So now he's got to figure out how to win this game and kind of get the talk back on him.
Let me broaden the sort of the recognition aspect out to the team as a whole. Yeah. Again, we're talking before game three. Maybe they win and we keep going on and we'll see what happens. But if they were to lose the series, whatever happens, the 49-win regular season, their most wins since the 70s. Right. John Wall, like we just discussed, is emerging one of the better players. He probably got MVP votes on some level. Bradley Beal had a great year, all these things. But what do you think the Wizards will be viewed at? Will they be viewed as a team on the come? Will they be viewed as a team that had a good year, but maybe they're not built for the long haul when you sort of look at some of their salary cap situations? How do you kind of view, think this team is viewed? If they make it past this round, it's a whole other deal. But if they were to lose this round, what do you think this sort of the season as a whole is viewed as?
I mean, I think the depth thing is something that's pretty obvious. I didn't think it was going to be as big of a problem in the postseason because everyone shortens their rotations. And Scott Brooks even talked about it before the game tonight about how Brandon Jennings isn't playing as much now as he does in the regular season. So I thought they'd be all right without the depth. The Celtics are running on the court right now. That's why people aren't booing me. That being said, if they lose in this round, I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, I don't know what you would say. I mean, I guess you say if they lose in this round, they're clearly not among that elite group of teams in the NBA. I think they have the core to be that, but they're probably a player or two away from having the depth where when a guy like Marquise Morris gets hurt or Oubre gets in foul trouble, that they can withstand that kind of stuff. We'll see if Mahimi being back makes a difference tonight, but could be interesting.
And sort of lastly, Otto Porter, he finishes the year fourth in three-point shooting, but he did it was better in the first half, tailed off a little bit in the second half. There was been some talk, basically because Zach Lowe put out a tweet earlier in the year. Boy, it's getting loud. He put out a tweet earlier in the year about Otto Porter getting max money. Maybe that's too much, but either way, what do you think about Otto Porter? Do the Wizards almost have to keep him, or do you think that maybe he hasn't shown enough that they have to stay with him just because?
I mean, they're so thin that I think you need to keep him. I mean, I don't know who else fills that role next year. Oubre, probably a year away from being able to play that many minutes and be that pivotal of a player for them. I think you have to keep him. I don't know if they'll get a max contract from somebody, but I think he's clearly proven that he's ready to make that next, you know, leap to that next level. We'll see what happens. If I'm the Wizards, I do whatever I can to keep him there, though.
Lane, man, I really appreciate it. I'll get you out of here before he's too loud for both of us. I appreciate it, man. Thanks.
All right. Many thanks to Lang. It was we were talking not long before the game started, and obviously it got louder and louder as it went on there in that interview, as they were, you know, playing the music and other sounds inside the arena. Of course, follow Lang on Twitter at Lang Whitaker. Really good follow there on the NBA. All right. Last but not least, the man, the myth, the legend, Brian Scalabrine. Straight up, I mean, it is fascinating how the evolution of his fame and fortune. So we talked about that, and let's just jump right into that. Here's Brian Scalabrine.
All right, we're here with Brian Scalabrine. I said 2 minutes. Let's do this quick. Okay. We're talking ahead of game two, so this is going to come, or ahead of game three, we'll talk. This will be after game three. When you watch this series as a former player, how much do you want to get out there? When you see these guys as aggressive they are, they don't like each other. How much does that sort of get your juices flowing?
No, I mean, I like it, and, you know, but those days are gone, right? I'm not in this thing thinking I want to get back out there. I'm just, you know, covering from a media standpoint, trying to break things down. I will say this. I think Washington at times, their great is great, but they're bad. It's also a lot worse than the Celtics. But tonight, for game three, I fully expect Washington to take care of business tonight.
When you watch this John Wall, Isaiah Thomas matchup, it's exciting. There are two different types of players. Obviously, Isaiah, the short guy, John Wall, the more classic point guard. How do you see that matchup, and just how do you view these guys sort of in the landscape of the point guards in the league? How do you kind of view these two?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? When John's going, he looks like the game is really easy for him. Like, it's I know it's harder out there than he's showing on, but I mean, he turns the corner, he's blowing by bigs. And then Isaiah continues to amaze me every time he's out there, how he does what he does. Forget the tragedy, just, you know, being 5'9 and doing what he does is absolutely amazing. So, you know, I think in today's game, with, you know, the lack of physicality on the ball, we're going to continue to see the point guard matchups, and they're going to continue to see these guys just absolutely dominate. Like, think about stopping John Wall without touching him. It's literally impossible to do. And Isaiah is such a big-time shot maker. If you make one mistake, he makes you pay.
Do you like this evolution of the game? Like, yeah. It feels like this series is like old school in the sense that they're trying to go at each other physically, but defensively they can't stop each other, which is the opposite of old school. Do you like the way the game is going?
Yeah, I do. I think it's more entertaining, the freedom of movement. You'll get to see the best players at their best. You get to see like the whole point guard position and how it's evolved in the skill sense. You know, like these guys, back when I played, there was like three guys in the league that can shoot behind a handback. Now there's probably like three guys per team that can shoot behind a handback. How many guards can run pick and roll? Backups can get downhill on a big man and score on a really good defensive player. So the evolution of skill is insane to me, but it makes sense, right? With the lack of physicality on the ball, the best thing to possibly do is run pick and roll. So you're going to have a million people practicing that and trying to get better at that. And I think the game is at an all-time level right now, and I think it's going to continue to go that way because people love to watch guards play. It's just the way it is. Like, they don't. Maybe there's a few people out there that want to see bigs go out there and bang each other, but it seems like the John Wall turning the corner, Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie, you know, even LeBron running pick and roll, these guys are absolutely amazing.
And this last question for you personally, you've become something of a cult hero, and you've got this following. How you played in the NBA, you were a guy in college, but like how?
Unexplainable. It's like Isaiah Thomas scoring 53 at 5'9". It's unexplainable. There's so many players that were better than me. Maybe it's just my charming personality.
Absolutely.
Maybe one day we'll be able to break this down. Maybe some guy like an MIT that breaks down numbers will be able to figure this thing out. But my kids ask me all the time, like, Dad, people at my school know you more than they know Paul Pierce. I go, that's just disrespectful.
Well, the 30 for 30, the Brian Scalabrine story. Hey, man, 2 minutes, I really appreciate it, man.
You got it.
Good
thanks.
Luck. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, and there we have it. That was Brian Scalabrine. Such an interesting guy. It really is just kind of nuts. And as he said himself, how his career has taken off post his NBA life. But really interesting guy, and really appreciated his time. So there we go. So Brian Scalabrine, Langwidker, NBA.com, Mike Prada with SB Nation. I'm trying to take advantage of the fact that we've got all these interesting NBA people around the scene. Caron Butler was there. Just couldn't snatch him. But I'm sure there'll be some other people around for game four. So we'll see how we can what we can do there. So I'm just glad we got this one in here. Check out on this day some thoughts on the Kelly Oubre situation on a separate podcast I'm going to put up as well as the one from of course Todd Dybas and I talked on Thursday after game three. We recap that on Friday. Spoke to one-on-one to Phil Schneider and Tomas Satoransky, so check that out as well. All right, let's end it there. Wizards Celtics back at it. Game four, huge game. Either they're tying 2-2 or they're going back to Boston down 3-1. Needless to say, the Wizards, huge game. Like I said, to me, it's pretty clear the Wizards are the better team. That doesn't mean they're going to win the series. They've got more work to do for sure, but, you know, you can see they've got the goods to get it done here. But, no Kelly Oubre in game four. We'll see if they can get it done. All right, that's it for now. Ben Standing signing off. And until next time, see ya.
Rush into Old Navy today for this can't-miss one-day deal. 50% off all Old Navy active for the family. Get the workout wear you need at a huge 50% off one day only today. Hurry in or miss out at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/20, select styles only, excludes in-store clearance.